Welcome to Viewpoints Around the World and Look Ahead Radio. My name is Tom Arms, and once a week I get together with my old friend Lockwood Phillips to talk about world affairs. This week we're talking about the bloodletting at the White House. There are other topics as well, such as Venezuela, North Korea, and the problems that the Japanese Prime Minister is having. Why don't you listen in? Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, heard every Wednesday afternoon here on the talk station and heard on radio stations around the world, literally and figuratively. And of course, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule, since it is nearly midnight when this is airing here on the talk station. But with that as a background, Tom, good afternoon. Well, actually, good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lockwood. Always a pleasure.
And as we are enjoying some preliminary fall weather here in our environs, what's the weather like in London?
Similar. It's a bit chilly and wet. When the sun comes out, it's really nice, you know, upper 60s, low 70s. But at the moment, I'm looking out the window and the rain is coming down and it's cloudy and it's a bit chilly.
Oh, typical London
weather.
They're
not very nice.
It's typical London weather then, isn't it?
You keep saying that. You keep saying, when I say it's sunny, you say, how unusual. When I say it's raining, you say that's typical. And you know, there is no typical London weather, I don't think. The thing about the London weather is, and the reason it's always the topic of conversation, is that it's constantly changing.
Well, hey, same holds true with politics in the world and particularly in the States, which allows me the opportunity to segue into probably the number one topic on everybody's mind right now. And of course, that is what's happening in Washington, D.C. So let's start off the program with what's the news about what's happening in the U.S. there in the United Kingdom and in Europe?
Well, I was watching two television news programs the other day. One was the Channel 4 News and the other was Newsnight. And it was all about the fact that the Mooch was leaving at the request of General Kelly. And they just could not help themselves. They just were laughing out loud. You know, the Channel 4 newsreader, I thought he was going to fall off his chair. But I know you're laughing too, Lockwood, but the point is they are laughing at you.
Well, that's, you know,
they're not laughing with you.
But you know,
they are laughing at America.
But there are,
and I think it's really sad.
There are some Americans who would argue, Tom, that we are finding this humorous as well, and we don't feel overly bruised by that observation about laughing at us. We find this humorous as well. But I will tell you that there are many in this country that are of the feeling that this is, you know, a personal issue. It's family, if you will, and really don't care about how the perception is initially being received there in the United Kingdom. But, you know, let's go not only with the issue of Anthony Scaramucci, but what about the issue of Rince Priebus, who is formerly the chief of staff. You mentioned General John Kelly now taking over that position. What was the feeling about the role that particularly the chief of staff, Rince Priebus, was playing, and the feeling that how this plays into to the relationship there in Washington and around the world?
Are we talking about his leaking things or allegedly leaking things?
Well, that was Anthony Scaramucci's charges, but
we
don't necessarily understand that. We also recognize that, unfortunately, the White House, President Trump, is having to deal with a lot of holdovers from the previous administration until Congress chooses to accept his changes. They approve his nominations. But yeah, just the whole issue of what's happening there in the White House, how is that being received? You mentioned humorously, but what's the feeling? Is this something that is of grave concern for the Europe, or is it just a matter of high dudgeon?
It's grave concern.
Okay.
Very, very grave concern, because it seems to be total chaos in the White House. They don't seem to be able to get their act together. They can't even decide who's going to do which jobs. And the President of the United States and the White House staff are, you know, leaders of the free world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are responsible for, you know, the most of the Western world's nuclear arsenal. They're responsible for 25% of the world's trade. They're responsible for so many things that they have to constantly be on top of. And they can't be on top of those things if they are going to be constantly bickering amongst themselves.
So no, clarify this. Of course, Tom Arms with lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. By the way, lookaheadnews.com, tomorrow's news today. Tom, you're saying this as an expat. You're a U.S. citizen now living full-time in the United Kingdom, as is your wife. But I'm curious, and I want to move on to other things. Is this a personal opinion of yours, or is this truly the opinion of the average British subject, or, you know, British citizen, and if you will, European citizen, France, Germany? Do they really have that opinion of the states that we are the, if you will, the leader? Is that the overall opinion?
Yes.
Okay. I just, it's something that we here in the States sort of have been taking in stride. And so we don't think of ourselves, at least I don't, of having that kind of influence over the lives of the average British citizen or French or German citizen or world citizen. Let's move on to other items here, because I do find that observation interesting. You've got a British email hacker breaking into the White House internet system?
Yeah, I don't know if that was reported in any great to any great extent there in the U.S., but it was reported here. And he describes himself as an email prankster.
Uh-huh.
And he convinced a senior cybersecurity advisor that he was Jared Kushner.
Okay, yes.
And sent him an email, and the chap sent him back his email address.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he had the email address of a key person, Homeland Security, at the White House. And on top of that, he then pretended that he was Rince Priebus.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't pronounce it any better than you can.
Right.
It's such an unusual name.
I think it's Rince, but that's Rince, all right. Yes.
Rince Priebus. Okay. Rince Priebus. He persuaded Scaramucci that he was Rince Priebus.
Right.
And that he thought that he wrote Scaramucci a letter saying or email saying you treated me badly. And Scaramucci more or less came back and said, well, you only got what you deserved.
So
an email exchange.
OK, so this was high dudgeon again in the British press or European press.
It wasn't high dudgeon. It was reported as more along the lines of the White House has to do something about its cybersecurity,
as does every other country in the world. But okay, it is fascinating, Tom, that there is all this focus on the U.S. and yet, and to give credit to the president, he has demanded that the European community take greater responsibility for its own issues, particularly in the relationship to supporting NATO and its own military investments within their countries. I've got a quick question on the coverage of this in relationship to other events in Europe. How does this, is this top of the fold, as we say in the print side, is this top of the fold news that folks have been covering there about what's happening in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, it's very much top of the fold. It's the front page, full stop, all of it almost.
Okay.
For one reason, Lockwood, is that this time of year, almost everyone in Europe has gone on holiday.
Ah, okay. Good point. And we've talked about this in the past. I've got one other quick question associated with the news of late. The story on Charlie Gard, of course, he has died. He passed, as some would say. How is that being reported in the press there in Europe and particularly in Great Britain?
Well, it's being mainly reported in the British press.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, the right to life lobby has been reinvigorated by it. And they're using it to put forward their agenda, which they have every right to do, of course. I feel very sorry for the parents. They've been caught up basically in a political tug of war, and or what's become a political tug of war. I think as an issue, the issue will always be there, and they will bring up this issue at times in the future, but it's starting to fade into the background.
That's okay. That to some degree is what we were thinking would happen here, but of course we're also pretty critical of the circumstances, as we've discussed in the past. All right, we're going to take a quick break with our guest Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio, Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAhead.News.com's expanded world analysis for the week being the 7th of August. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. The German general election campaign officially kicks off on Sunday. Unofficially, German politicians have already been busy. In fact, Chancellor Angela Merkel will be campaigning in North Rhine-Westphalia on Saturday. But from Sunday, the political parties can start splashing out the euros on paid advertising. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, meanwhile, is finishing off his tour of Southeast Asia. Mr. Tillerson is taking in the Philippines, Thailand, and Malaysia. In the Philippines, he met with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, to discuss plummeting relations between Moscow and Washington. Sergei Lavrov is also touring Asia this week. As well as the Philippines, he will visit Indonesia for talks with the foreign minister. Then the Russian foreign minister is off to Thailand on Thursday to meet the Thai prime minister and foreign minister. The 50th anniversary of the founding of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations is the big draw for both men. ASEAN foreign ministers will mark the occasion with a gala fireworks display on Tuesday. Britain's Hillsborough football disaster is back in the news and courts on Wednesday. David Duckenfield, Graham Henry Mackerel, Peter Metcalf, Donald Denton, Alan Foster, and Norman Betterson will appear in court on a variety of charges, including manslaughter, and involving a total of 861 victims. South African President Jacob Zuma on Tuesday faces his 9th parliamentary vote of no confidence. Zuma has come under mounting pressure for corruption, but in all the previous no-confidence ballots, the big majority of Zuma's ANC party has kept him in power. In Kenya, a general election will be held on Tuesday. When the elections were held 10 years ago, 1,000 people died in the violent aftermath. The main contenders for the president's job are incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta and incumbent Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Venezuela remains a key area of focus for South American and world leaders. On Tuesday, Peru hosts a meeting of Latin American foreign ministers to discuss the Venezuelan situation and how best to react to the illegitimate vote on the 30th of July for a new constitutional assembly. Argentina is also having a poll next week. On Sunday, it is staging primary elections to select party candidates for the October 22nd legislative elections. Former President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner is seeking a comeback as the potential Citizens Unity Party Senate candidate for Buenos Aires. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, you can sign up for Tom's regular news blog by going to the website, LookAheadNews.com, no charge, I might add, as well as listening to Look Ahead Radio. And, of course, Look Ahead Radio is heard on this station and other stations around the world. course, heard every Friday evening here on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240. Tom, let's move on to a few other items. And I know this is not on our list, but I'm just curious what the status is right now with, in light of the fact that August is kind of a holiday season for Europe, and I would assume also for the UK. Politics in Great Britain, particularly in relationship to Theresa May, Prime Minister, the topic of Brexit. Is there any discussion happening at this point? Has there been any further political fallout or conversation? What's happening in that area?
Nothing is happening in that area over the past 10 days, simply because everyone is on holiday. They've all disappeared. Theresa May is off on a walking holiday around Switzerland. People aren't saying much. Philip Hammond, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, has said a few things about the need for taking a softer line towards Brexit. But there's been nobody around really to contradict him.
Okay, so it's really...
But when they come back, they will.
Okay, so in reality, back to our earlier conversation, what's happening in the States is sort of helping to fill the space. And of course, we're pleased to know that we're providing some service to international relations.
I think, to be quite honest, Lockwood, I think it would fill the space regardless.
Okay. Quick question back to that issue of what was happening in the White House. The opinion of John Kelly, I keep saying James, impression of General John Kelly as the chief of staff, how is there any feeling in light of the fact that, of course, he has a long and very storied career with the military, and particularly there in Europe? What's the feeling there? Any opinions one way or the other?
Yes, a lot of people are saying that this could be a turning point, a good turning point for the White House or organization of the White House.
Okay.
That someone like Kelly won't put up with all this backbiting, bickering and leaking, and mm-hmm. will get things organized in a Bristol shape fashion and whip them all in the shape with his military baton. But at the same time, people are saying he can't do that with the president, and the president, with his tweeting and his off-the-cuff remarks, is seen as the chief culprit.
Mm-hmm.
He can speak tough to the director of communications. He can speak tough to Jared Kushner even. But he can't speak tough to the president.
Right. Now, that's a very good point. And we here in the States are equally at times a little frustrated, but we've accepted it. We've taken it in stride. I want to move on to another item which actually involves the U.S., and that, of course, is the Russian reaction to efforts on the part of the U.S. on related to sanctions, and, of course, the announcement by the Russians to reduce the size of the U.S. embassy in Moscow. How is that being reported?
Again, it's on the front page. And I think you'd expect it to be on the front page. 755 staff reduced.
Right.
Now, most of these are local hires.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they're Russian. A lot of them could be the spouses of American diplomats who are quite often hired by the embassy at local rates.
Right.
And so they're called local hires. Or they could be Americans living in Moscow, married to Russians or something like that. So something like the American embassy in Moscow will have doctors and nurses, right. They have accountants, all these people who will be hired locally, and a lot of them will be American. Russians have reduced the staff to the same number as are now in the Russian embassy in Washington. But I think it's not quite balanced, because what it doesn't take into account is how many Russians there are in New York who are at the UN. That's a completely different diplomatic mission.
Right. The other aspect of this is, of course, is the perception of the relations with the U.S. And of course, the question of has to do with the relations with Russia and the rest of Europe. First observation on this, of course, there's been a lot of concern related to collusion with Russians related to the last presidential election in the U.S., which has generated a lot of interest. It strikes me that this proves that there weren't very close relations with the president and Russia prior to his election and as he was going through the process. So what is the perception now of U.S.-Russian relations? And what is the current state of European, and I would include the UK in this, European and Russian relations? So what are the two perceptions there?
They're very suspicious of Russia. And I don't think it's so much, you know, they are concerned. They're still concerned about the possibility of collusion between the Trump campaign and and the Russians. But they're probably more concerned about Russian interference. Now, I don't think, I think people over here will argue that, you know, collusion has not been proven.
Right. We agree.
And, you know, I think that's more or less given. Collusion has not been proven and may not be proven. They may not have colluded.
Right.
However, that it's almost an absolute 100% certainty that Russia did interfere.
But that's not, that's really quite not a shock to us in light of the fact that previous administrations. Previous administration, we had President Obama, who definitely attempted to interfere in Israeli elections. We recognize that this has been a process that has been going on for decades between the Soviet bloc countries and the free world, and that would be included Europe, Germany, Great Britain, United States. No one's immune to this.
I'm sorry, Lockwood. I don't think you can argue that two wrongs make a right.
Nobody's arguing. You know? No. We're not arguing that these two wrongs make a right. I'm arguing.
You cannot say that it is right.
No.
For a foreign government to hack into people's computers.
We know that this has been going on for decades.
Then it should be stopped.
We should be stopped. But I don't see that we need to point fingers at any one administration, as has happened with the Trump administration. I think we all acknowledge that. And it's been a concern, an international concern.
But we're talking about the sanctions. And the sanctions were imposed for two reasons. One was the continuing problems over the Ukraine.
Okay.
And two, Russian interference in the elections.
Okay, but I go back to the fact that it has been modus operandi for so many administrations. I mentioned earlier Obama and Putin and others who have attempted in some way to influence their neighbors. And so not that we're saying it's right, but it has been a fact of life. I don't want to belabor that point. All I want to do is get, and we've got to go to a break, Tom. But the issue here is looking at the impact of the reduction in U.S. embassy. Is that a heightened concern for European community, or have they just sort of taking this in stride?
Yes, it is a heightened concern because, you know, those diplomats are doing an important job. They're doing an important job in trying to prevent the U.S. and Russia from coming to blows over a number of different things, Syria or Ukraine or whatever.
All right,
they're doing that's a very important job.
Let's come back to that in a moment. We're joined, of course, by Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom and I were talking a few moments ago about the impact of the decision by Russia to reduce the number of personnel at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. We're also talking about the influence and the impact of such things as or interference in the electoral systems in the U.S., but also attempted in France and other locations. And you mentioned a moment ago, Tom, that there's concern that the U.S. comes to blow with Russia. Of course, this goes back to the president's concern about the European community taking greater responsibility and activity in relations with Russia. And you mentioned Syria as well. The U.S. has attempted at various stages in previous administrations, I might add, to try to work out solutions with the Russians related to Syria and Iran and Middle East and other areas around the world and even the Ukraine. There is no perfect solution, yet every time we're talking, there seems to be criticism of whatever the U.S. does. It is frustrating for me, a member of the audience, if you will, about these continued criticisms of what the U.S. is attempting to do. Where is Europe in these cases? What are they doing?
Okay, I think you have to look at it, that Europe obviously is going to look at it slightly different because they have to live with Russia.
So
much more than the United States has to on a daily basis.
Then it strikes me
is literally right next door.
Then it strikes me that Europe should be more active.
What?
It strikes me that the European community needs to be more active and, in fact, take a lead in some of these
active.
Issues.
But taking a lead. You're wrong in taking the assumptions or working on the assumption that it is not active. They have a lot more meetings about Ukraine not involving the U.S. than they have involving the U.S.
Well, I think this is great.
Angela Merkel's in and out of meetings on Ukraine all the time.
Well, Grant, I think this is something that we like hearing here in the States, and it doesn't quite get the coverage either here in the States and possibly
it doesn't and
it should.
And the reason is because what the American audiences are interested in hearing is not what Angela Merkel's doing, but what Rex Tillerson is doing, or what the minister responsible or the assistant secretary of state responsible for Ukraine or Russia or European affairs is doing. That's what gets reported, and quite rightly.
Okay,
but
now,
I tell you that a lot is being done by the European community.
Okay,
the High Commissioner Federica Mogherini is in and out of that region all the time as well.
But I want to move to another item very quickly. We've got to move on to other issues. Sino-Russian cooperation in the Baltic is something I'm interested in. But I did see today that there is talk about arming the Ukraine right now. What have you heard anything of that effect, to that effect?
No.
Okay.
Let's see if I can dig it back in my memory here. They did have nuclear weapons.
Right. Yes, they did.
But they did have nuclear weapons, and as part of their independence agreement, they had to relinquish those nuclear weapons.
All right.
And in return for which, Russia guaranteed their security.
Okay.
And after that, of course, Russia sponsored the breakaway of Eastern Ukraine and
Crimea.
Annexed Crimea.
Right. All right. Let's move on to, since we're on Russia, let's talk about the Sino-Russian cooperation in the Baltic and elsewhere. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Now, I think what you've got here is you've got two countries. Now, I don't think this is going to last forever, by the way, this cooperation. but you've got two countries who have found a common interest.
And those two countries?
And the common interest is that they don't like the liberal values of the West.
Okay.
And they want to stand up to them. They want to defeat the liberal values of the West. Because those liberal values, as long as they are there, as long as they exist, they are a threat to their authoritarian way of doing things. They offer an alternative.
Okay.
And so in that sense, it's a bit like the old Cold War. So the Russians and the Chinese are cooperating on a lot of things. It's not just these Baltic exercises. They're cooperating at the UN, at the Security Council. When Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, went to the G20 summit, where did he stop off? He stopped off in Moscow. Why? Okay. He was given the Order of St. Andrew, the highest honor that anyone could be given. He went to Putin's private birthday party.
All right. So you see,
they go to each other's military parades, you know, all these sort of things.
Okay, let's move on because I want to stay with China for a few more moments. Related to the Chinese and Indian tensions, they're growing, and you have here on the roof of the world. We've talked about this in the past, but of course, India is the largest democracy in the world, population-wise. And
this a billion.
And they are, of course, close allies with particularly the U.S., but I would say all of the Western European community as well. So what's happening there with Chinese and Indian relations?
There is in the Himalayas between the country of Bhutan, which works hand in glove with India, but is nominally independent, and the Indian state of Sikkim, there is a 12-mile gap through the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm.
And that 12-mile gap has a road running through it, which connects the six of the northeastern Indian states to the rest of the Indian subcontinent. The Chinese are trying to build another road to effectively give them control of that gap. The Indians refer to this gap as their chicken neck, which I think is a good way of describing it.
But here's the question. We recognize the importance of this, particularly, if I'm not mistaken, has to do with water. Is that correct?
It does, because the wider issue is the Tibetan Plateau.
Right.
And off the Tibetan Plateau comes virtually all of the major rivers in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they control this gap, they can cut India off from the Tibetan Plateau, as well as their six northeastern states, and secure their control over Tibet, which India still has problems with. They give refuge to the Dalai Lama. He lives in India.
Okay, here's the question. How severe is this this breach, if you will, between the two countries?
It's been going on for a couple of months. There's been no shooting as yet, but both sides are sending more and more troops to the border. And what has happened is the Indian troops, the moment they saw it happening, they created a human wall between the bulldozers and the road, mm-hmm. so that the bulldozers could not, you know, go over the could not create the road. And that human wall is still standing there. And more troops are being rushed to the site from both sides. And the Chinese ambassador in India has rather threateningly said, if India doesn't withdraw, it could have an impact on peaceful relations between our two countries.
Well, another issue of concern, Russia seems to be, and China seem to be pretty belligerent these days. Speaking of belligerence, let's talk about North Korea and the fact that the Chinese and the North Koreans are at times they seem awfully close, and yet we hear stories that China is concerned about North Korea. North Korea, of course, has been flexing its muscles recently, particularly with ICBMs. What's going on with North Korea and China?
I think you have to think of the bigger picture here.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger picture is, why isn't China doing more? Why isn't it cutting off North Korea and letting it collapse? A lot of people say it's the refugee issue. And yeah, I'm certainly the refugees are part of it. I think that there's this overarching Chinese policy of Asia for the Asians. And when they refer to Asia as the Asian, right. for the Asians, they probably mean Asia for the Chinese.
Right.
And they don't like American troops being in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And North Korea, and they certainly wouldn't like American troops being on the border with China. They would feel threatened by that.
Right.
And they'd be concerned that if North Korea was forced to give up its nuclear weapons in a humiliating climb down, that the regime would collapse and the Korean Peninsula would be reunited under South Korean tutelage. The American troops would not withdraw, but would simply move right up to the border with China. And that I think is one of the reasons. North Korea for them is a buffer state.
Okay. How is that perceived by, I want to go back to the perception there in the European community. First, and we've only got about a minute and a half to go before the next break. First, what is the opinion? Is Korea seen as a major world threat or just a threat to the United States?
Oh, yes. It's a major world threat.
Okay.
And then, because if it's a threat to the United States, the United States would have to retaliate if okay. North Korea launch an ICBM,
right.
And they would retaliate by blowing up North Korea, and that would drag China in, and then we've got it all over again. It's a Balkan situation in Asia.
Okay, and then final question before we go to the break. China, how is China perceived by the European community and by Great Britain?
It's seen as an authoritarian. Well, there's several ways it's seen. One is as an economic opportunity.
Right.
I mean, that's one way. But at the same time, there's a lot of criticism about human rights and censorship and the authoritarianism in China, the growing cult of personality for the Chinese president.
Okay.
So it's on different levels.
All right. We're going to take a quick break with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Moscow loves Beijing. Beijing loves Moscow. For now. The two countries, the two leaders, the two systems have a common cause. A strong dislike for what they view as a morally and politically corrupt West and its liberal values. This is coupled with a firm belief that their 1984-ish censored authoritarian system, which has harnessed market forces to state control, is the future. The result is that Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese President Xi Jinping are busily jumping in and out of each other's metaphorical beds. For the first time ever, the Chinese Navy recently sent three warships to participate in a Russian naval maneuver in NATO's Baltic backyard. On his way to the G20 summit, Xi had one stopover, Moscow, to collect Russia's highest honor, the Order of St. Andrews. When Russia staged a military parade to mark the end of the war against Germany, Xi was the guest of honor. When China staged a parade to mark its victory over Japan, Putin was the guest of honor. China has copied Russia's stringent laws on NGOs. Russia is learning to apply the Great Firewall to Russian internet users. In the UN Security Council, the political lovers either openly support each other or quietly abstain. When pushed to take a stand on Ukraine, President Xi smiles enigmatically and shrugs. Putin does the same when the South China Sea is mentioned. In North Korea, little is made of the fact that Russia also borders North Korea, was largely responsible for starting the still unresolved Korean War, provided Pyongyang with the building blocks for its nuclear program, and is being every bit as uncooperative as the Chinese. But the romance won't last. Remember the 60s and 70s when the two communist giants nearly came to blows over who should lead the world revolution? The forces of geography, history, culture, and the uneven distribution of power and resources between the two countries means that this romance can only end in tears, and perhaps worse. To start with is the fact that for centuries the two countries have sparred for influence in Central Asia. Russia likes to think they are top dog, as for a long time they literally own the Asian stands, such as Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. But that is quickly changing, as Chinese money pours into the region, and its new Silk Road, or Belt and Road Initiative, links China to Central Asia, and both regions to Europe. Russia is a political and economic minnow swimming in shark-infested Chinese waters. The only area in which super-fit judo expert Vladimir Putin excels is military muscle. Russia is still a nuclear superpower. It boasts the world's largest nuclear arsenal with an estimated 4,300 nuclear warheads compared to 4,000 American warheads and a paltry 260 in China. It is because of Russia's imbalance of military versus economic power that Moscow is a greater threat to world peace than Beijing. The Chinese prefer to exercise their power with cash. The result is that they now have a massive stake in the stability of the world order. Moscow's only weapon is, well, weapons. It projects political power by destabilizing countries and regions through the barrel of a gun. And the Russians love power. Ex-KGB man Vladimir Putin is not alone in wistfully dreaming of the halcyon Cold War days when the dominoes were falling in Moscow's direction. In those now long-ago years, Russian military was backed up with a political ideology that gave it a world mission. Now it is no more than the underachieving playground bully who seeks dominance through violence. This makes Russia the greater threat to the security of the world, and that world includes China.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Of course, Look Ahead Radio heard on radio stations around the world. And Look Ahead News, go to that website, LookAheadNews.com, tomorrow's news today. Tom, I want to bring up two other quick issues before we wrap it up with the sad tale of the Aussie burglar. But first, very quickly, the Venezuela crisis. We didn't touch on that. I'm curious, is that being covered in the European press? Of course, there's a lot of questions what's happening in Venezuela. But very quickly, is it being covered? And is there some concern about the future of South America?
Yes.
Okay.
It's being covered quite big, and there is concern about the future of South America and that the situation in Venezuela could spill into Colombia and to Brazil. I myself am going to be in Colombia in a couple of weeks' time, and this is one of the things I'll be looking into is the Venezuelan refugee situation.
Okay. I just want to make mention of that very quickly. We'll get back to that. I want to now move very quickly on to Shinzo Abe, accused of cronyism in Japan. Let's talk about that very quickly.
Yeah. Basically, he's supposed to have given some help to an old friend of his to set up a veterinarian school. And when I say help, it ran into millions of dollars of help.
I like that help. Yes.
And this is led to an investigation. His leadership of the Liberal Democratic Party is in doubt. And there's another investigation coming up in which he is alleged to have helped an ultra-nationalist kindergarten school. Far-right kindergarten school set up, and that's due to report in September. His popularity ratings have plummeted to 27%. He is in trouble.
So maybe President Trump can assist him. Of course, his popularity ratings are down in the 40s, so he could show Shinzo Abe is the prime minister. Am I correct on that of
yes.
Japan, and as opposed to president? So maybe he and the president can get along. The other issue, of course, is Japan is also very concerned about what's happening in Korea, as we talked about a few moments ago. Let's talk now. Let's wrap it up. And we try to wrap things up here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World. Well, a slightly humorous issue. The sad tale of the Aussie burglar. Okay, what is so sad about this story?
Australia in Perth. This burglar decides he's going to break into this nice house. He breaks in, and there in the sitting room is a big case of champagne because they were preparing for a party. And saying, I'll just have a drink. So he has one bottle. He has two bottles. He has 2.5 bottles. And he feels a bit tipsy. So he goes and lies down, just like Goldilocks did. And, of course, the owner comes back It's the burglar sleeping in her bed. So she sneaks out of the house, calls the police, who can't rouse him. He's so drunk, he's passed out. They have to call an ambulance to cart off the burglar.
It doesn't pay to burgle a house with lots of champagne. All right, Tom Harms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, as always, look forward to our conversation next week. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Harms of Look Ahead News and Look Ahead Radio. LookAheadNews.com. Tomorrow's news today.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.